Hey, hey, Heat Nation. Welcome back to Heat is Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, Miami Heat, coming off a surprise Game 2 victory last night against the Boston Celtics, showing that, hey, Boston Celtics, you might be the more talented team, but that doesn't mean we're just going to roll over and give it to you. You got to earn it. No more talk about being a championship contender. Just be one and win the games. Otherwise, the Heat are going to do stuff like this, pulling out a 111-101 victory. Let's just jump right on into it. So, game last night at the Boston Arena, Miami wins by 10 points. Looking at the injury report, there's no changes at all, pretty much exactly what we had expected. So, same nine-man rotation for the Heat, starting Tyler Hero, Caleb Martin, Jaime Jaquez, Nikola Jovic, Bam Adebayo, then off the bench, Haywood Highsmith, DeLon Wright, Duncan Robinson, Kevin Love. Though Kevin Love, very few minutes, we'll get to him a little bit later on. Recapping the game itself, Heat came out with an intent to get threes up in comparison to the previous game, putting up 15 three-point attempts, knocking down 8 of them, and helping the Heat offense to keep pace with the Celtics throughout the first quarter, eventually taking a one-point lead going into the second. Second quarter itself, Boston did take the lead back early, but later on into the second quarter, the Heat's hot shooting kept them in and eventually did help them get a lead, but a flurry of late threes by the Celtics before the half would see the Heat down 3 at the intermission. Early in the third quarter, after a few lead changes, so again, everything's just going back and forth, Miami staying competitive and just keeping pace with the Celtics. Heat finally got a break, going out on a 10-0 run to be up double digits, though the Celtics would immediately respond with a 7-0 run of their own to cut into that, bringing it back to single digits. But Heat keeping a six-point lead going into the fourth. That's a nine-point turnaround in the third. I will absolutely take that. And then the fourth quarter itself, very tense. The whole thing about this series was supposed to be no expectations from Miami because how undermatched they were. So everything was just going to be a chill time. Nope, that fourth quarter was tense as hell. I could not sit down. The Heat's lead hovered around 7 throughout most of the quarter. Miami just keeping Boston at arm's length. I don't think they ever got it within 5 or 6, something like that. And then in the final minute, going up 11 and then clamping down on the defensive end before eventually settling in on a shocking 10-point victory and evening up the series 1-1. Moving on to player performances, because this is where I'm going to spend the bulk of the time. A lot of great games from players. First up, player of the game, I give to Tyler Hero. And it says something, I guess, both positive and negative, I guess, that, Hero seems to be going back and forth between having bad and inefficient games and then playing some of the best games of his career, right? You go back to Sixers game, it was a lot of him not hitting the open shots in game one of this series as well. Him not hitting the open shots, thus making inefficient offense, and were big reasons for both those losses. And then you look at the flip side of it with the Chicago Bulls game and tonight, where he is just amazing. A career night for Hero, actually. 24 points, 5 rebounds, 14 assists. Yes, 14 assists. 1 steal on 7 of 13 from the field, 6 of 11 from 3-point range, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, and only 3 turnovers. And just making the right play on offense over and over, whether it's like, oh, I have the open 3, boom, take it, hit it, 6 of 11 from 3. Oh, I got they're closing out on me, I got Bam Adebayo, open for an easy dunk, whip it between 2 Celtics defenders right to him, boom, get an assist, Miami gets a bucket. Everything just flows. And that was the big thing, right? I've seen some games from Hero like this throughout this season. First one, big one that comes to mind was the Washington Wizards game in early November. It kicked off a 7-game winning streak for the Heat. But the thing that stood out in that game was Hero at his best when he is mixing both the playmaking, the shot making, and just trying to keep the offense flowing, whether on or off ball. After Tyler Hero, and certainly worthy as well of being player of the game, if not for just the 14 assists, I still can't handle that. But also deserving of respect, Bam Adebayo, 21 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, a 9 of 13 from the field, the 0-1 from 3-point range, and 3-6 from the free throw line. But no turnovers, great defense all throughout the game, as usual, because this was a game where we actually saw more of Jovic on Porzingis to allow Bam to be on Brown or Tatum or just whoever and cause havoc. And that was through most of the game. Then the fourth quarter itself, Bam Adebayo was pretty much keeping the offense afloat with a bunch of tough jumpers, mid-range jumpers, like around the paint and the elbows. And like, these were legitimately tough shots, and just nailing them, keeping the Heat offense afloat, keeping them just far enough ahead of the Celtics. Great game by Bam Adebayo. Great game for him in game one as well. So good to see that this time it helped to contribute to a win. After Bam Adebayo also having great game, Caleb Martin, the last of Miami's 20-point scorers of the night. 21 points, 2 rebounds, 1 steal on 7-12 from the field, 5-6 from 3-point range, 2-2 from the free throw line. On top of just phenomenal defense all around, a bunch of big shots. This was like Eastern Conference Finals Caleb Martin out here to reclaim the souls of the Boston Celtics, I guess. Still moving along, this is more like in the shout-out of like, hey, you still had a great game territory. Nikola Jovic, 11 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, 1 block on 4 or 5 from the field, 3 or 4 3-point range, though no free throws. But, like I mentioned earlier, spending more of his time guarding Porzingis, did a fairly good job at it, all things considered. You know, he's, what, 20 years old. But that was just so necessary to let Bam impact different areas of the defense, especially considering Miami was not doing a lot of zone this game, for good reason, to help limit some of the Boston three-point shooting. But just to finish up on Jovic, beyond just the great defense that stood out to me was just the fact that he was impacting so many different areas of the game while being incredibly efficient at it, 4 or 5 from the field. And then last for the really played well, I think, Haywood Highsmith. 3 of 5 from 3-point range, good for 9 points, and then just great defense on top of that. This is exactly what we asked of Highsmith. Be a 3-and-D player. Part of that means knocking down the threes. When that's going down, he's just a great NBA player to have in your rotation. Moving on then to players that were like, it's kind of so-so to maybe bad, which I guess could be your areas of opportunity for the next game if you want to think of it that way. Jaime Jaquez, still great, 14 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, though a little inefficient, 4-13 from the field, 3-6 from 3-point range, 3-4 from the free throw line, and there was a big shot in the fourth quarter in particular, a 3-pointer that he hit. I think it like put the Heat up 9. It was like late enough in the game where the Celtics were trying to push back, but then Hawkins extended it back up to 9 with a main 3-pointer. So despite the inefficiency, I would still say, you know, fairly decent to good game for Hawkins. And again, his lack of fear for the Celtics, or for anybody in general, that hasn't just been the Celtics. It's been Joel Embiid with the Sixers or with the Bulls. Whoever you throw in front of this dude, he's just not afraid of them. Then getting deeper into the bench, DeLon Wright, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1-4 from the field, 1-3 from 3-point range, so at least was able to contribute there. Duncan still not looking too great, 6 points, 1 rebound, no assists on 2-8 from the field, 2-7 from 3-point range, but giving us enough. And then Kevin Love, no points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist on 0-1 from the field in only 6 minutes and only in the first half. Second half, Eric Spoelstra going more so to Nikola Jovic as the backup center whenever Bam got his like 2 or 3 minutes of rest in the second half. So despite calling for more Love minutes last time, that maybe we're going in the opposite direction and Love is going to get his minutes reduced or even be cut in this series. Moving on to some interesting stats from the game. Like, this was really a game where Miami just flipped the script from game one. So last game, Boston Celtics made a franchise record of 22 three-pointers in the playoff game or something like that. The Heat came back with their own franchise record in this game, in large part why they won it, going 23 of 43 from three-point range. They made 23 three-pointers, good for 54% as well. To the Celtics, 12 of 32, good for 38%. And that's a good percentage. Like, that would lead the league in the regular season at 38%. It was more so about Miami just being absolutely lights out from three-point range. And in a game where both teams, I think it was like they both made 37 field goals. 37, yep. That means the difference of Miami having 23 of those 37 being three-pointers versus the Celtics having 12 of those 37 be three-pointers gives Miami just a plus 11 advantage right there. And in a game that they won by 10, that's pretty much the difference right there. That gives Miami then a three-point attempt rate for this game of 57% versus Boston's 40%. And that was one of the things I remember from last game. Miami was the one that had the 40% three-point attempt rate, but Boston had like 65%, something like that. So that's what I mean, like, just flipped the script. Miami was the team making more over half of their shots from three-point range and converting over half of them. Just really going to be hard to beat for anybody. Other stats, though, Miami did tie turnovers 12-12 with the Celtics, but won points off of turnovers 20-9. Again, 11-point advantage there. That could have been what swung the game as well. But they did lose fast break points 7-15. Points in the paint 26-46. That was another flip script. I think actually it was literally like 46-26 Miami's way last game, if not something around there, like 45-25 or 48-28. But Miami doing the best, since they were getting all their damage from 3-point range, did not have to go inside as much. And then conversely, they did a much better job at limiting the Celtics and forcing them inside. So sure, have your points in the paint. We'll take more points from three. I mean, literally, the Celtics did it to us last game, and we just took that and did it right back to them this game. But did lose points in the paint, 26-46. Did lose offensive rebounding, 4-6. And then points off, second chance points, 0-8. So there were some areas that Miami was getting smacked in. And again, one of the concerning things I would have, maybe a little glass half empty on this, would be when the Celtics shot that well from three last game, it was a 30-point blowout. When Miami shot that well from three this game, it was still, you know, they had him at an arm's length. Still had him like 5-6 points away throughout the fourth quarter. But definitely not the blowout that it was game one. So that would be a little bit concerning. But then I think you look at these certain areas, like the points in the paint, the offensive rebound, and the fast break points, and you can see where the Celtics still kept themselves in the game. And then to finish up the stats part, and is also another moment where I just like tip my hat and say, yeah, Eric Spoelstra knows way more than me. I thought the game plan that they had in game one was good enough where it was like, hey, limit Tatum and Brown, and if anybody else beats you, just let them go for it. Eric Spoelstra decided to go for the opposite approach and said, hey, Tatum, Brown, you two can have as much as you want, and we're just not letting anybody else get off. And it ended up working. Tatum and Brown combined for 61 points in this game. Like, they produced. And on good efficiency, too. But only got 4 assists on 6 turnovers combined. Whereas last game, Tatum had a triple-double. So I think it was like 10 assists, 3 turnovers, just himself last game. So that's where you see this game. Like, that's the idea, right? You do go off, do whatever you want, but we're not going to let you rack up a bunch of assists by passing out to get easy three-pointers for somebody else. And then we'll roll the dice that way and see what happens. Well, what happened was outside of Tatum and Brown, only Derek White scored 10-plus points. And, hey, big, big reason towards Miami's win, not letting anybody else on that roster get going. So closing this out, honestly, I just got to say right here, this is mission accomplished for Miami. Not only did they avoid the sweep, which even with the circumstances of Jimmy being out and Rozier being out and Duncan injured, like it still would have sucked a lot, but they avoid the sweep and they take a game at the Celtics Arena, this series going back tied 1-1. Like every time you go into a playoff series that's and you're the road team, that is always the only thing you hope for. Just come back to game three in your arena tied 1-1. So with the Heat outperforming expectations to this point in the series so far, maybe we get a little greedy for Game 3. Let's see. Looking ahead to Game 3 now, first, the injury report. Currently, there's been no updates if Terry Rozier will be back for Game 3. There's been, like, some hints of it, and personally, I thought if he were to come back, considering he was on a week-to-week basis, it might be Game 3. But we just got no confirmations or anything yet. But that's usually how the Heat go. At this point, I would almost expect Terry Rozier to like warm up for the game and then still not go in the game like the Heat did with, what was it, like Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, one of those times earlier. Moving on, though, for Boston side, they still just have Luke Kornet out, backup center for them. I don't think that's anything too major for them compared to what Miami's missing. So looking at this game this Saturday at Miami, the Heat won, that puts the onus on the Celtics to adjust. So some areas I think that the Celtics are going to lean onto. First, the big obvious one would be limit Miami's threes. There was some quotes after the game about how they thought that their closeouts were good. Well, then your closeouts can't be good. They got to be great. And therefore, the emphasis will be more on limiting Miami's threes, similar to how Miami's emphasis was on limiting Boston's threes by not running as much zone. Then I think another adjustment the Celtics are going to try to make is, I think, also a little bit obvious as well, is just less ISO ball from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And try to get them maybe more so involved in actions or pick and rolls or something where they can lean more into the playmaking and setting up the other players on the roster. Because Miami did a phenomenal job of closing that down. Big reason towards their win. And then last one, more speculative here, because this one is just more so my thinking of it. I think the Celtics might try to crash the offensive glass more, because if they're not converting decent enough shots from three, then that's going to obviously open up more chances for offensive rebounds. And they do have a size advantage over Miami. And then you combine that with them winning the offensive rebounding battle in game two, winning second chance points 0-8. That could be, well, from their perspective, 8-0. But that could be an area where, like, hey, this is something that we could needle at a little bit more and try to tilt things more in the Celtics' favor. So, conversely for Miami, then, it's going to be about boxing out and making sure not to let them crash that glass. So those are the adjustments I think the Celtics are going to make Game 3. But staying on the idea of, like, what Miami can do and other areas that they continue to improve upon, one's going to be limiting turnovers and, by extension, limiting fast break opportunities, because that's been a common problem with this, with the Heat versus the Celtics over the last few years, has been live ball turnovers leading to easy points by the Celtics. So more the Heat can do to limit turnover, it just helps everything. Miami has more possessions to try to get more points. Boston has less possessions to get less points. And they're getting less easier points as well because of not getting those transition opportunities. After that, I'm starting to wonder if Kevin Love might have his minutes trimmed or even cut entirely from this series. I don't think this will be something that maybe happens in Game 3. It might be something that happens more so in Game 4. But if Spoelstra wants to be proactive about it and not wait for the adjustment to be forced upon him, I think that's where he's going to go, and maybe he already started doing it game two. Because, like I mentioned earlier, Kevin Love, 6 minutes, all in the first half, nothing in the second half. When Bam went to go rest in the second half, Jovic was the one taking over as the backup center. And doing well in the few minutes until Bam Adebayo came back. Because, again, the other part of this as well is Bam Adebayo, in the playoffs, he's going to be playing 40-plus minutes in the game. So even just off of, like, what do you need from a backup center, you only need 6 to 8 minutes. Like, Jovic can do that. That may be more beneficial just to have Jovic in there, considering he's already starting, so he's already warmed up, he's already hopefully in a rhythm. And unless he's having a bad game, then you say, hey, Love, we're just giving all these minutes to Jovic and letting the young guy run. And I got curious, so I looked back to the series last year, and admittedly, I can't remember if Love was injured. I don't recall him having an injury in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but as that series went on, Love did play less minutes, eventually getting DNPs in Game 6 and 7. So this also could just be a situation where, like, this is a bad matchup for Love, especially considering the Heat aren't running as much zone, which is the primary defense when Love is out there. So if I look at this as Jovic doing better, Bam playing more minutes, Love already a potential bad matchup considering, like, age and the style of defense you have to play with him, then yeah, I could see it where Love might get his minutes, you know, trimmed or cut. If not Game 3, then maybe Game 4, depending upon what happens Game 3. And then the other thing I think that the Heat are going to try to do is mix in the zone a little bit. So the idea game 2 was essentially to say, hey, look, we are going to play you straight up as little zone as possible, and then, you know, make Boston essentially try to adjust to attacking a Heat defense that is not set in zone. And then that's where you start to get the back and forth. We're like, okay, well, now we're going to, now that you're in a rhythm and you think that it's not going to be, it's been man to man or switching or whatever, now we're going to throw in a zone for a possession or two just to get you off rhythm. Which I guess gets the zone back to, as I understand, was what it was originally meant to be, which is just something you did occasionally just to be a little disruptive. But I don't think it's going to be something that the Heat do consistently at this point, like just through the rest of the series. Boston showed game one, if Heat plays zone consistently, they're just going to bust it with their three-pointers. So, but a little zone, you know, kind of spruced in there, you know, late in the fourth quarter. It's a tense possession. You're going down the court, and then Miami just busts out the zone. Yeah, that I think could be extremely effective. So now with some potential adjustments given for both sides, what are my expectations for Game 3? So both teams have had absurd three-point shooting that have led to wins in both their games. So I think by now, both teams are just going to do everything they can to limit threes on both ends, which essentially is going to force the offenses more so in the arc itself. And honestly, I think that favors Miami better because it keeps the Celtics from being able to just run away behind a barrage of three-pointers. I do think they'll have their stretches. I mean, again, like, despite it all, they had that stretch at the end of the second quarter where they made like three or four threes. And yeah, that hurt. And yes, at the end of the game, they still shot well. But just trying to keep the volume more so in the 30s, which means that three-point attempt rates should be below 50%, like maybe around 40, 45%. At least that's a little bit more manageable. So if that ends up being the game plan, that means the Heat are going to have a better emphasis on getting into the paint and converting while they're in there. Maybe that's where you can see a little more lobs to Bam, or hero floaters if he really has that floater going. Stuff like that to take advantage of the fact that like the Celtics are going to be more so trying to close out hard and run the Heat off the three-point line. I do expect an easy expectation to have is the Celtics are going to come out swinging with a lot of what they have, right? Currently, their narrative is in shambles because an 8 seed missing their best player just took a game off their home court on top of the whole rivalry that's been going on for the last few years. And so, yeah, I fully expect the Celtics to come in and just haymakers as hard as they can to not only, you know, take back the home court advantage by winning Game 3, but they're also trying to establish a tone that they're a different team from what they've been the last few years, which has been a really good to great team that then falls apart when things get really tense in the playoffs. And last expectation, Saturday night in Miami, more so evening, like 6 o'clock. But no rush hour traffic on the, you know, afternoon, night, or whatever. So I expect the Miami Heat Arena, Kaseya Center, to just be absolutely loud. Again, this is going against the Celtics. Actually, I would probably imagine that there's a fair amount of Celtics fans that are going to be at the game, as they typically are in Miami. So you're going to have a loud crowd. Most of it will be on the Heat side. And maybe that can give them a little extra juice to keep this competitive, maybe even pull out the win. So, Game 3, Saturday. I will be back on Sunday to recap that, and then preview Game 4, which will be the following Monday. We're getting to the point in the series now that it's going to be every other day. But for now, I do thank you for hanging around. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture off of X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, at Full Access Pacers, Celtics Lab, if you want to get their side of the series, and Brooklyn Buzz. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. I'll be back on Sunday. So until then, hope you all have a great one, Heat Nation. I know I sure as hell will. Woo!